Reese on the radio, making sense of the news. Yeah, even when it makes no sense at all. Now on WTIC, News Talk 1080.
I think it's appropriate to give a round of applause to our newsman, Bob Brown. I'm going to do something I normally wouldn't do. Okay, I'm going to give praise to a neighborhood that I normally wouldn't, because I would immediately say, that's not New York, that's Long Island. But he's right on the cusp. He's right on the cusp. Give it up for Bob Brown, New Hyde Park's very own. You might as well be Queens, Bob. Just tell everybody you're from Queens, New Hyde Park. They won't know. I'll vouch for you. I spent a lot of time in New Hyde Park. It's right near Elmont. That's where my brother lives now. In Elmont. He bought a house out there. Bob Brown. I love it when he's here. Thanks, Bob. Let's get to some headlines. Sad story coming out of California. Former presidential candidate and Utah Senator Mitt Romney's sister-in-law, Carrie Elizabeth Romney, was found dead near a parking garage in Valencia, California. Authorities responded to a call on Friday night to reports of a dead woman near a parking garage. The woman, later identified as the former senator's sister-in-law, either jumped or fell off a five-story structure near Valencia Town Center Mall. And she was 64 years old. I haven't heard anything new yet, but I will check on it on any other stories. This is another story that will be a part of Wacky Whitey. We'll get to that. You may know that Alec Baldwin and his brother Stephen crashed their SUV into a tree in East Hampton, speaking of Long Island, Bob, on Monday. It's unclear of who was driving. We do know now it was Alec Baldwin who was crashing, who crashed the car. And TMZ has obtained photos of the crash. We now have video of that, which we will show. In fact, I can show it in a minute. In fact, let me see if I do have it here. Here is Alec Baldwin talking about the crash and I guess the events as it took place. It turns out that Alec Baldwin is lying about the crash.
But this morning I was in this car accident. Guy cut me off in a truck, big garbage truck. I mean, a garbage truck the size of a whale. I've never seen a garbage truck. It must have been something commercial for, like, taking away material from construction or something. It was the biggest garbage truck I've ever seen. Anyway, I won't go into the details now and bore you, but to avoid hitting him, I hit a tree. I hit a big fat tree and crushed my car.
Yeah, so I'll explain that in Wacky Whitey today, because it isn't, the Wacky Whitey story isn't about that. You're going to have to pay very close attention to your ears on this one. I'll explain it to you in a little bit. Stand by for that. Also, Zoran Mamdani appears to be in a little bit of trouble. His campaign quietly took nearly $13,000 in potentially illegal foreign donations, including one from his mother-in-law in Dubai, the New York Post has learned. At least 170 of the nearly 54,000 contributions to the leading Democrat candidate's campaign have come from donors with addresses outside of the United States. An examination of the New York City Campaign Finance Board records found that only U.S. citizens are supposed to and permitted to legally or legal residents are allowed to contribute to political campaigns and political action committees under federal, state, and city law. And the candidates are expected to return any illegal donations. Violators who knowingly accept foreign donations could face hefty fines and imprisonment. So, yeah, it appears that he may have done that, so he may have to give the money back. I don't even understand why they would do that. Now, for the stupidest thing I read today.
Yes, you do. Stupid as can be.
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
Letitia James. Or better yet, the New York Times. You might not know this, but the New York Times is a leftist publication who often runs interference for Democrat operatives, no matter where they are. And of course, if they're in opposition of Donald Trump, they go double time. In this case, they may have actually sealed her fate. Letitia James, that is. So according to a full investigation done by the New York Times that had three writers on it, One of the writers was Jonah Bromwich, Kate Kelly, and Stephanos Chen. The three reporters all read the indictment and all somehow, in some case, failed to mention in their article paragraph 9 in the indictment. What's in paragraph 9? Letitia James told the Universal Property Insurance the Norfolk property was owner-occupied for non-seasonal use. But that's not the only infraction. There's much, much more. She told OVM Financial, which is a bank, that it was a second home so she can get a 3% interest instead of the 3.815. She told the insurance company that it was owner-occupied so she can get lower premiums. And she told the IRS that it was a rental property and had zero personal use days. In essence, she would never be there to claim the maximum tax deduction. And she also told New York State it was an investment property. Now, they all reported this or failed to report this in the story, all of paragraph 9. But here's what they did write. And here's where the problem is. The New York Times says their key evidence, remember they omitted the earlier stuff, but anybody would have caught it. The key evidence was Nakia Thompson. That, I believe, is a relative of Letitia James. She gave grand jury testimony that she lived in the home rent-free and did not pay rent. That's in the indictment. But in the indictment, in paragraph 10, it says that Letitia James filed a Schedule E tax form reporting thousands of dollars of rent received. Both cannot be true. Why is this the perfect trap? It's simple. If Thomas paid no rent, James committed tax fraud. That means he false rent received and deductions. James committed additional tax fraud with zero personal day use while visiting regularly. And James committed mortgage fraud because he controlled the occupancy and violated the second home rider. Even if the Times is wrong and Thompson did pay rent, that individual, who, by the way, is already a felon, has lied to the grand jury. Yeah, it gets worse. The Times tried to frame it as a straightforward factual dispute needing more evidence. But this isn't a he said, she said. It's a document contradiction. And the grand jury sinks her. The whole thing is done because, again, you're now going to have to question, why did you tell the grand jury, Thompson that is, that you were paying no rent? Why did you say that? And if you didn't pay any rent, why is Letitia James saying that she did? And I would subpoena any records that say she did receive any rent. She'd have to, right? Because that would have to be a part of her tax returns. She's claiming that she did receive rent, while the actual tenant said she paid none. So I think this is going to be, between the two of them, their own undoing. And I think they're just horrible liars, but that's just me. 860-522-WTIC. Let's go to the phones. Jim is in Wellington. Hello, sir.
Yes, sir. You had mentioned previous to a couple of your breaks about the legacy of Obama.
Yeah.
You didn't believe he had a legacy.
Yeah, I don't believe if the legacy was the Affordable Care Act, and if that could very well be overturned, much like Roe v. Wade, if we were to get another case in the Supreme Court and it would be over because John Roberts, in essence, helped that thing get through by saying it was a tax and the government had a right to tax. So if that's over, what else do you have? And everyone says that that is his signature legislation. And I would quote Charles Krauthammer here and says that the election of Donald Trump means that Obama's legacy was written in sand.
Yeah, well, Obama's legacy, in my eyes, is the destabilization of America because of his foreign policy concerning the Middle East. And you would mention specifically Iran, and the fact that the president of the United States helped to fund terrorism that killed all kinds of people.
Exactly.
Created all kinds of new terrorist organizations that then killed more people.
Yeah, paying them back for paying. That was the interesting part. Dropping off a pallet of cash after all of the wrongdoing of the mullahs, after all of the wrongdoing of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and then saying that and trying to explain to the American people that this was money that we unjustly seized and we're just paying it back, knowing that they were going to use that money.
And let me add something else to that one part, one point. Obama went across Europe and the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
destabilizing the achievements of this country.
That's right. The apology tour.
Apologize. It's funny how you apologize for numerous things about the sins of America, but mm-hmm. never once mentioned what this country did to rebuild Europe and to protect Europe and to protect Israel, just a bunch of people.
Do you remember his famous line, Jeff? I mean, Jim, do you remember his famous line? Oftentimes, America has acted arrogantly.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's all well and good, but here's where I'm going. And this is the brilliance of Donald Trump. Obama spoke to all those, the same people, mostly the same people, but from leaders from the same countries anyway.
Sure.
And said all those things. And Trump has done the same exact thing with maybe new leaders, but the same countries, basically. And completely turned around. Trump has exposed the UN for what it is concerning Israel in the Middle East. He's exposed the UN and the policies of Obama concerning what the money that the UN spent for Hamas, where Hamas just grabbed it. And somehow Trump has been able to get both Arabs and Israel to agree to disagree, but to also come together for the better good of the area.
Right.
And the last thing I'll say is the only thing Obama did for the Middle East and for Europe, but for the Middle East specifically, was guarantee there'd be chaos and terrorism. And Trump turned that thing on a dime.
Yep.
And you started your show, and I'll end with this, and thanks for the time. You started your show with where does Trump stand in a pantheon of leaders?
Sure.
Right now, in my lifetime, the best president I've ever looked at or considered, and in the pantheon of leaders, he's right up there.
He's neck and neck, my friend. He's neck and neck with some of the greats. I'm not going to lie. And I think I'll say this so much. It's not just, and it's interesting because we're talking about Barack Obama versus a Donald Trump. And I will say this, is that Barack Obama as a legacy candidate in the sense of he was transformative, but again, for the most ridiculous of reasons, his skin color. Donald Trump being what, you know, many people will call the traditional white man as being president, he has been absolutely culture changing and transformative in foreign policy and domestic policy.
Well, let me close with this. If you can give me another 30 seconds, let me close with this. If you took a Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Biden, and Trump, and then wrote down what their major accomplishments were, I could say that even though I disagree with Mr. Clinton, he left office, the country was in the black. He was forced to move to the middle. We know what happened when he did that with the Contract of America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got Trump and the other two. At the end of the day, Obama's got absolutely nothing that he can hang his hat on. Absolutely
nothing.
And we don't even have to talk about Joe Biden. Easily, in my view, the worst president in the history of my life.
And yeah, I think in order to even be considered, you'd at least have to be present. And now we know he wasn't,
He might have been better if he embraced the fact. I said on your show a long time ago when he was hobbling around, maybe he should get himself a campaign cane and he should put notches in it or whatever and embrace your frailty.
Yeah, exactly. Because then he'd at least get some sympathy. Thank you, Jim. Yeah. I appreciate you. America does have sins that have not been acknowledged. I mean, I can go to plenty of countries that have sins that have never been acknowledged. And let me address what Bob J just said in the chat room. And this is, again, this is exactly the type of nonsense that, I'll put this word, unserious people make this argument. Very unserious. It is commonplace to put down America. It has been drilled into the minds of leftists over and over again, and they think it is something that they believe. They have been told so many times the opinions that they have came naturally. They did not. They did not come naturally. They are indoctrinated ideas. That's all. That's all it is. To ignore travesties across the globe and the atrocities that have happened across the globe. Compare America to the Congo today. Compare America to Nigeria from the perspective of Christians today. That mantra of America having sins it must atone for is ignorant, and it is embedded in the minds of people who are easily influenced. Because I would simply say to anyone about the sins, they'd be so atrocious. Name a place without sin. It's like what Jesus said. Let he without sin cast the first stone. Would you say that Ukraine is without sin? Would you say Russia? How about China? Would you say that Mao Zedong and the color revolution, would you say that those folks are without sin with the millions who were killed? Millions. Would you say Stalin was a stellar human being? How about Lenin? Would you say that the countries that they ruled over, that, you know, they have atoned for their sins? I mean, if we were really to measure up, and again, I would always say, I look at this in a very, very simple way. And it's easy. It's easy to discern. With all of the countries in the world, name the one everyone's trying to get to. And in Bob Jay's view, they're all trying to get to the place where sins have never been accounted for. They all wish to come to the place that is not atoned. Quite interesting. And when asked why do they come here, it's for things like opportunity, religious freedom, freedom of expression. Things that no one, and anyone like Bob Jay, will never hold other countries accountable for. I laugh as I watch black people on white folks' channels scream about the evil white man and never get lynched. I want to say it again. I find it interesting that black folks on white people's networks scream about the evil white man and his sins and never leave the studio in cuffs and strung up on a tree. This white, racist, oppressive country. How they scream and holler in the middle of the street when they see a white person, call them white devils, attack them because they didn't say hello or because they have an argument with them. And never once has the Klan rode in burning crosses in front of their homes. How they have this miraculous freedom to malign and excoriate the opposite race without any accountability. This racist, bigoted country. Astonishing. And yet, I'm supposed to be told that it's much tougher for black and brown people today than it ever was during the Jim Crow South. Than it was in the 1920s. I'm sorry, but I'm not falling for that. But again, like I said, these aren't original ideas. None of them are. They didn't come to this on their own. They couldn't, because if they thought critically, they'd never believe any of it. But they can't think critically. This is what they have to stand on. This is what they have to believe in, have to believe in. Because if they were to stray oh, the real lynching will begin from the people they used to agree with. Don't ask me. I wouldn't know. I just get it every day. I know exactly what it's like to be theoretically lynched by people who I refuse to agree with on a daily basis. When you get around your posse and get around your crowd, you are adored. You are patted on your butt and told, good boy. Me, on the other hand, I'm the sin that keeps on giving. I'm the sellout, Uncle Tom. Please spare me. At least I've decided that I'm going to think for myself. Have a good one. We'll see you in a minute. More news, more views when we return, plus your phone calls. It's Resetter Radio on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hi, this is WTIC News Talk 1080 Operations Manager Steve Salhaney. Happy birthday, WTIC News Talk 1080.
Oh, man, I can't wait to get into town to hang out with Steve. Reese on the radio, we're back. Wacky Whitey coming up very soon, the Alec Baldwin edition. It sort of has to do with the car crash, but it's something that you are going to love, and it's an internet craze, a social media craze that you are going to respond to when you see it, so stand by for that. It is hilarious and in some ways embarrassing, if I say so myself. Stand by for that. We've got a lot of fun that we're going to have with that as well. I wanted to talk about this because as it relates to the murder of Mimi Torres, the 12-year-old who was found in a container in the back of an abandoned home in New Britain, there has been a lot of criticism of Mayor Erin Stewart. And the reason why people have been criticizing her is for having this sort of deer in the headlights behavior at the press conference yesterday and seeming not to know how to react to this situation. And I know I can see it, that she's responding to it poorly. And I know it is out of frustration, and she wants another crack at it. This sounds crazy. It's like, Reese, how do you know that? Trust me, I know. I know. When the criticism weighs heavy and you've done nothing wrong, you weather that. Add to being ridiculous. I know what I did was right. I handled it correctly. I can't please everyone. And you stay focused. But that's not happening here. That's not happening here. So I want to respond. I want to show you what I mean by that, but a tweet that she put out, and an ex post that she put out, as responding to someone who had gone after her about not questioning or at least saying that she was having issues with DCF, or if she took issue with them at all. She responded by saying this. Are you kidding me? No question mark. Are you kidding me? This was not my place to give an opinion on the failures of DCF. As a mayor, I don't control them. If the press wants to ask me about that separately or privately, then I can, and I'll give my opinion. Discussing a heavy and disgusting case about the abuse and neglect and ultimate murder of a 12-year-old girl is not the time to add my opinion. Get out of here. Okay. I am absolutely for reasonable frustration with critics. This is not how you do it. It isn't. The DCF question is a legitimate one. And the opinion is not what anyone needs. It's not an opinion about DCF. It's a response to questions about DCF. Going above and beyond to state why you said nothing about it almost gives leverage to the person questioning you. So I'm going to do the thing that I would have done. Never had political office, never did it, just the radio host. I gave some advice unsolicited yesterday. Let me do it again. This is how you respond to queries about DCF and if they are indeed responsible. If you're going to respond to a post, to an individual, the two things you never ever start with or end with are the words, "Are you kidding me?" Because therefore you're saying any queries are unreasonable. They may be, but never let that show. You are responding to them because their questions are legitimate, no matter how ridiculous they are. From the ridiculous to the smart, all queries to you, the leader, are to be dealt with respect, not dismissiveness. You can't dismiss it. Even if you think that it is, you can't dismiss it. And if you think this in some way is sort of making you hard or edgy, you know what, a type of person that pushes back, this is not your enemy. This is someone asking you a legitimate question about DCF. Do you think, or were there any failures with DCF? Do you think you should have been harsher on DCF? Here's how you respond. Without knowing all the facts, which are coming, it is difficult to say what responsibility DCF had. But if indeed there were problems that DCF ignored, we must hold them to account and get to the bottom of that and find out where those mistakes were made. Folks, off the top of my head, you tell me if that's a legitimate response to a person. I don't have to say, get out of here. We are turning over. In essence, I am saying to you, I'm outraged by what happened to this 12-year-old girl. It is evident that she didn't have her own parents, her own aunt, and her own mother's boyfriend caring about this child's best interest. But if there was anybody else who could have come forward, or anybody else who knew about this girl missing from school, or if there had been any reports about abuse at home that DCF was concerned about and were alerted to, if they drop the ball on this, they will be held to account, but only after we get the evidence. That's what you tell them. You are stern in getting the information and letting them know I am on top of it, and when we find out who's responsible, we are going to hold them accountable. But going after the people asking questions who are concerned, as if this suggests they have no right to be, or they should get out of here for even suggesting to you something, it's not the way to go. At all. You've got to be, you just have to be consistent with who you are as far as your character is concerned. That you are outraged by this, and you want to get to the bottom of it. Having these cheesy little back and forth stupid rivalries, or, you know, back and forths with some person you disagree with or you think is sort of out of whack. No. Consummate professional. That's your job. You're running for governor. You're running for governor. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to come back to bite her. But the governor, I mean, if you really think about it, Lamont has said nothing. And you think about that. You want to take his place. This is an opportunity. I mean, if we're being real here, and I'll play makeshift campaign director. Okay? I'll play makeshift campaign director for Aaron Stewart. If I'm your campaign director, this is what I would be telling you. Hey, you know, Lamont hasn't said anything about Mimi's death. Hasn't said anything about her murder. I got to be honest with you. If I'm you and I'm running to take his job, I've got to show the leadership that he lacks. Let's put out a statement about this. And let's ask that the governor bring some attention to this, because again, him sitting in that office needs his attention, and his lack thereof, we got to put him on the spot. And we got to let everybody know in Connecticut that the reason why you are better fit for this job than he is. That's what I would say. Now, I'm saying that on the radio. You have no idea what I would tell her in private. It would be much harsh, much more harsh. But I would be telling her right off the bat that this is the opportunity where you show leadership when Lamont has not. a young girl was starved, dragged, left in the back of an abandoned home. She had gone missing since last, well, if they're right, maybe had been dead since last fall. This could very well be a national story. You've got to get in front of it. And the governor has not. So forget about somebody asking you a question that you're not comfortable with or that angers you. That's not leadership. That's emotion. Discussing a heavy and disgusting case about the abuse and neglect and ultimate murder of a 12-year-old child is not the time to add my opinion. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Let me help you. Here's an opinion that you can steal. It is in my opinion that we haven't been doing enough to protect at-risk children. We have seen it countless times with the suicide of an 11-year-old girl, a young toddler falling out of a building, abuses taking place inside of our schools where young black girls were harassed by young white students and spat on. And no one has stepped up to protect those children. In my opinion, something must be done. And as your governor, I will. Okay? Again, if I may, off the top of the dome, as they say in the hip-hop world. Now, why is it so easy for me? Why is it so easy for me and not for many? Because they don't feel the way that I do about this subject. I don't need to know Mimi. I've raised kids. I don't need to be even related to that child to know that the death of a 12-year-old left in that place, in that way, who clearly must have been afraid, who must have been fearful every day of her life knowing that no one was going to save her. And then to die in that fashion. Emotions should be bubbling up in you that you can respond in a way that tells everybody, or at least to convey to everyone what you know everyone is feeling if they're really thinking about the well-being of that 12-year-old girl who died in such a way. That the people who were, in essence, supposed to just protect her did not. Abused her. Did some of the most egregious things to her, never even caring. I mean, looking at the size of that child, looking at her face, and you've all seen the picture, knowing that somebody, that the emotion that comes out of that, or in this case, a response, should come naturally. If you have a heart, if you're a human being, that's why it's not hard for me to come up with something to say that shows and exudes leadership. Especially when you know the people who should be saying something are saying nothing. And you're trying to make a name for yourself and you are running for the most important office in the state. You have got to show leadership, Aaron Stewart. Again, I have not backed anybody here. But this, unacceptable. Work on it. People are already saying that you're not ready for prime time. This isn't helping you. And it is echoing true with statements like this. You have an invitation to come on the program if you'd like to respond to it. Maybe clean it up a little bit. But if I were you, I'd do something. There's an opportunity here. You should take full advantage of it. We'll come back. More news, more views, and a sad story about an R&B singer. If you have heard, we're going to pay him some respect when we return. It's Reese on the Radio on WTIC News Talk 1080.
It's Reese on the Radio on News Talk 1080. WTIC.
In Watertown, how are you, sir?
Hey, good, Reese. Thanks for taking the call. You said pretty much most of what I would have said. we all know what DCF is a very big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I think with her, with this being in her city now, and she's the mayor of New Britain, that mm-hmm. she should feel rage. That's what she should feel about it.
Right.
And so I think where we might disagree just slightly is I think that, this is what costs her, any traction and a nomination to be
the
Republican nominee at this. Yes, I do. Because there's a lot of us out there that have a lot of strong feelings about DCF, and whether we're conservatives or whatever you want to label us.
I'll put it to you this way, Chris, if I may, real quick. And I'll tell you why. Yes. I agree with you in the sense of, like, no one ever knows what's that one thing that's the issue that will tank a campaign. And in Connecticut, I've noticed this for the last, 3 years now, that the sort of protection of children has waned in ways I've never seen in our society. And it is very, very prominent in Connecticut in politics. It's like the only thing they seem to be fighting for is getting these atrocious books in school. But yet there's the ignoring of things like education or the well-being of children. That stuff is just ignored. It gets no traction, which baffles me.
Basic things that we should be doing as a state.
Yeah.
Basic education and basic care and protection of them as well.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe, I mean, you could be right. This could be that issue where, you know, and again, I watched that press conference and, you know, it's not a one-off. I'm looking at the press conference and there's just no leadership. We see the police officers talking. We see other people talking, like different people involved as far as law enforcement. And she's there and she's got her hands folded and seems out of place. It's not natural. It's weird.
She has good script and she has good social media, but my concern is that when it comes to making a hard decision, and having to do it in I don't want to say in a split second, but having to do it with very little time to prepare.
Yeah.
Not gonna be able to do it.
It doesn't come off natural.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
It comes off as a politician, not as a person, and that's why you can say it so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Good point. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you holding for me, man. You got it. I want to pay some respects to a person who I can honestly admit I was jealous of. And I think a lot of men were a little jealous of this guy. And when I say they were a little jealous of him, because I don't know a woman who didn't swoon over him. And that music video, How Does It Feel? R&B singer D'Angelo has passed away at the age of 51. I guess he was struggling privately, very privately. I did not know. He was suffering from pancreatic cancer, and he passed away today at the age of 51. But if you remember him, you remember every girl who lost it behind that How Does It Feel music video where it's just, you know, him topless with no shirt on and it's a little below the waist and he's just spinning around. It was the most simple music video I've ever seen in my entire life, but it was probably the most watched music video on any video music channel known to man. D'Angelo, gone at 51. Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS traffic set. I know you remember that man. There it is.